more of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Presented by the Radio MD Network.
Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. We have a great guest for you this half hour. Dawn Leslie Fielding is a licensed respiratory therapist who got interested. Well, we'll find out why she got interested so much in this disease. But COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, is the third leading cause of death in the United States, with more than 11 million people diagnosed with it. But an estimated 24 million probably have the disease, obviously 13 million without even knowing it. It causes serious lifelong and long-term disability and early death. At this time, there's no cure, and the number of people dying from it is increasing fairly substantially. Dawn, thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And the book is titled The COPD, for Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease Solution. So what motivated you to write the book? You're obviously caring for people with the disease. Why'd you decide to write this book?
You know, I initially started writing the book I owned a couple pulmonary rehab clinics and caring for the patients on a daily basis that suffer from this disease. I was looking for some literature or something that I could put in their hands so they could take notes in that we could use in our educational series of classes that we had. And that's really where the book started. I initially anticipated having a 30 to 35 page, you know, little notebook that they could take notes in and we could review, and it just continued to grow and grow. And I realized that there's just kind of a lack of resources out there for these patients. So I wanted to see what I could do to help contribute to helping them have what they need, improve their life, and make some progress. So many of them feel like they, you know, they get this diagnosis and they feel so poorly. They don't realize that there's little tiny things that they could change every day in their life to really make a drastic improvement in the way they feel and the quality of their life. So that's where it all started.
Well, what can most of them do? What you've got 10 steps in this plan for the COPD solution. How do you use the book to get those 10 steps? And then are those 10 steps which are should everyone do, and what are the 10 steps?
So the 10 steps start with, and it kind of depends on the person and maybe what your initial or your most prominent issue might be. The 10 steps include everything from diet change to medications, covering oxygen therapy, and several little things that they can do throughout their life and throughout their day to help improve things. So depending on what your primary issue may be, let's say that we need to start with breathing retraining with somebody. So that might be the first chapter to go to.
How do you know if you have to start with breathing retraining? In other words, what would signal that they need breathing?
That's one of the first things that I usually tackle is the breathing retraining. And that is because due to the shortness of breath that these patients usually feel, they tend to do less, they're less active, they move around less because they feel short of breath, and they're frightened, and they suffer from a lot of anxiety trying to navigate and, you know, determine what is safe to do and what isn't safe to do, how far do I push myself. So we start with a breathing retraining simply because that addresses the issue immediately, and that's something that they need to start practicing immediately. We'll try pursed-lip breathing.
And give me a hint, what do you mean by breathing retraining?
So What we start with first, and what I've seen most with my patients, is they'll come in and they feel short of breath, and their first response is to open the biggest hole and get as much air as fast as they can. So that seems like the natural thing to do. But what we know is that when we do that, it's actually counterproductive, and it's making it more difficult for them to recover from whatever activity or whatever they've been doing to bring on the shortness of breath. So the first thing that we do is practice pursed-lip breathing. And I always tell them, it's smell the cake and blow out the candles. So you're in through your nose and then you're out through your mouth, just like you're blowing out candles on your birthday cake. And what that does is build the back pressure all the way back to the air sacs so that you can get more of the air out of the lungs, so that the next breath you take, that space can be filled with oxygenated air. So working on that is a really important thing to do, and that's usually where we start.
Now, along what would be number two? Okay, so we're now...
We're
now breathing okay. What do we do next?
Along with that, we also practice diaphragmatic breathing or belly breathing to strengthen the accessory muscles so that they have a little bit of extra strength to help with the breathing suffering. The next thing that we usually tackle would be medications. We want to make sure that they're taking these medications to the best of their ability. I had one lady come in. We were doing her therapy, and she was, you know, suffering from a little shortness of breath, and it was about time for her medication dose. So she pulled a spoon out of her pocket, and she got her inhaler out, and she sprayed the inhaler on the spoon, and then she licked the spoon. So I thought, okay, well, this was only the second visit that I'd have with this particular patient. So we immediately, of course, went into medication. We want to make sure that they know these medications are designed to be effective and they're very good, but we want to make sure that the delivery of those medications is optimal. So we teach them.
So spraying it on a spoon wasn't exactly the right thing to do.
That's right. We want to make sure that you're inhaling that medication. With the inhalers, that needs to go down and get deposited into the lung. So having it on a spoon, it's not an oral medication to take that way. So it's just not effective. So we want to make sure that
number
they know,
three,
you know.
Number three in your list.
Number three we usually tackle is nutrition. We'll start kind of assessing the patient's diet. You know, what are your favorite drinks? What are your favorite kind of foods? What are your daily habits? So we look at those and we assess those things. And then we teach a little bit on what kind of foods they eat or they consume that actually make it more difficult for them to breathe. And in doing so, we'll talk about eliminating soda. We'll talk about replacing, you know, maybe they drink excessive coffee or a lot of soda. We'll start incrementally replacing some of that with water. Want to make sure that they have enough water to keep the mucus that's in their lungs. A lot of them have excess mucus. We want to make sure that it's they're hydrated well enough so that it'll move effectively when we cough. We want to make sure that they're not having too much carbonation or too many high refined sugar foods, because the way those break down in the body creates extra CO2 or carbon dioxide in the blood, and that actually makes the breathing more difficult. So that's usually the first three things that we tackle.
And now when... One of these in the book is essentially accepting your diagnosis as well. Mm-hmm. That is, accepting the fact that you've got COPD and you've got to get treatment for it. In that acceptance, how many people, is that a big deal? Is it easy to get people to accept that diagnosis? Or is that a real tough part of the problem?
The part that's real tough about that is the anxiety that is associated with it. You don't really recognize how valuable your breaths are until it's hard to take those. And so once they get this diagnosis and they... What was that?
Until they get this diagnosis.
Yeah, once they get this diagnosis and they hear a little... I've had a lot of patients that come in and they're... Education is really lacking in this, which creates a lot of anxiety. Understanding it is really important, and it's an important role to accept it. Once you accept it, the anxiety level changes and the outlook changes. So you're not looking at this as apprehensively as you do before. You know, traditionally or historically with my patients when they come in, once we get to this point where they say, okay, I understand this, this is what I have, that's kind of a big turning point, because then we can...
And when we come back, we'll get back with Dawn Leslie Fielding, The COPD Solution, a wonderful book, wonderful plan if you have someone with COPD.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Michael Roizen, MD. Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. You, of course, can send us emails anytime for questions at udocs, y-o-u-d-o-c-s at gmail.com, y-o-u-d-o-c-s at gmail.com. And, of course, call in with questions, 844-305-7800. And before we get to a question from Jim Graham in this hour, I want to continue one of the things that you have in the book, the COPD solution. By the way, it's COPD, thecopdsolution.com is how you get to the website, thecopdsolution.com, to the website for getting to Dawn Leslie Fielding, and you can obviously order the book on Amazon, etc., is that you talk about yoga in the book. And people will say, are you teaching them yoga just for the breathing exercise? Are you teaching it for the stress relief? Are you teaching it for the exercise? Or do you know what is the benefit they get from yoga? Or does it just seem to work and we'll have to figure out why it's working later?
The answer to that is yes. Yes for the breathing, yes for the stress relief, and yes for the strength. I've had patients that come in. One gentleman in particular came in, and he had gotten to a point where he even sold his chickens. He had a little farm, and he sold his chickens because he couldn't walk to the back of his yard to feed his chickens anymore. And after a few, it was probably about 3 months of doing the program, he had built his strength up enough to where we start our yoga on a chair, modified positions, and he was doing floor positioning, you know, just put his oxygen tank right next to him, and he was just going right along with the best of them in the yoga. And it's just amazing, the flexibility and the strength and the breathing, and the stress relief is also important. It's really important that they form, I guess for all of us, that we form a mind-body connection. We need to listen to our bodies and give them what they need. Then get used to what they're telling us. Be in touch with what we need to feed ourselves, whether it's positive self-statements, whether it's nutritious food, whether it's, you know, a day to relax or a moment to relax, a few deep breaths. I mean, it could be any of those things. We just need to be sure to be in tune with that. And that's one of the things that the yoga helps with the most.
Now, how much of the, and are you seeing, you're seeing more women with the problem? Why is that?
You know, I think it may come back to jobs. It may come back to being, you know, exposure to different elements in the air. It may come back to life expectancy. It just kind of, there's various reasons why that could be the case.
We have a caller on the line, Jim Graham, who is a frequent caller to the show, and I love Jim. Tell us, talk to us.
Okay. Don, thank you so much for taking my call. I got to make a statement at the beginning. You're preaching to the choir right here, because I was a smoker in the late 50s and up until the early 70s, and I played sports, and I used to get out of breath all the time, and I used to have bronchitis every year, two or three times. But since I've quit smoking, no more bronchitis. And I'm getting old now. I can't run like I used to, but I breathe normally and everything else. And I was, one of my questions was, there's two questions, basically. One question is, how do you convince people, or can you convince anybody that's been a smoker, that if they quit, some of these things are going to leave them, you know, like the bronchitis and the pneumonia. And also, the second question is, if you damage your lungs from smoking, is it true that your lungs will heal themselves over time?
Okay, so question number one regarding smoking. We always urge and encourage and offer as much help as possible and as many resources as it takes to help somebody overcome that and be able to quit smoking. It does, however, take quite a bit of determination and a mindset from the individual themselves. I have found in my practice that you can give somebody as many tools as you have or as many tools as they need, and until they make the determination that it is what they need to do for themselves, they aren't going to help. So we always try to encourage them and do whatever we can on our side of things, but it ultimately comes down to really, you know, that person making the decision for themselves that that's what they need to do. And question... Go ahead.
The second question was about your lungs healing themselves after they may have been damaged by the smoking.
What you'll find with the lungs is things that will improve are like you've experienced. The breathing is better. You know, you have less mucus. You might be coughing fewer times during the day. But the damage that is done clear down in the air sacs, unfortunately, is not something that is repairable. So you may see some symptom reverse, but the damage itself to the little air sacs in the lungs is not something that will regenerate and repair itself. But
so
that
the bottom line is, do not even start smoking because you're going to do damage to your lungs immediately.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was just on Capitol Hill, you know, a month ago, trying to change some legislation for smoking with the children. We work a lot trying to just discourage that and stop that right before it starts. Yeah, it's always better to not do that at all, for sure.
Thank you so much. That was very interesting. Thank you, Mike.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Have you seen any start of this with hookah bars and hookah smoking, since that is in our kids? I don't know if it's reached the age of causing a problem in at the COPD level yet.
Right. I think that's yet to be determined in large part because we've got to wait for enough years to go by that where we can see the long-term results of that. But I think a lot of people do have the misconception that smoking an e-cig is just fine. It's okay. There's no damage done, which is not the case. And I mean, you can read any headlines on e-cigs and you can find that to be the truth with those. They're very damaging as well as regular cigarettes.
And now when someone starts yoga, this is a question we got on the email list, how exhausted do they get? And can anyone start yoga at any time?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. Yes, anyone can start. And here's the measurement that I use so that people can determine how far to push themselves. It's called the Borg scale. It's a scale from 1 to 10, and it's very similar to the pain scale that your doctors will ask. You know, you go into your visit or the emergency room, what is your pain from a 1 to 10? I like to ask, what is your level of exhaustion or your level of exertion between a 1 and a 10? And when they are getting to where they're a 6 or a 7, I don't ever want them to go beyond that. That's the state we try to stay at. You'll perpetually be able to do more to get to that level, but you don't want to push yourself too far beyond that, especially if you're at home and you're by yourself instead of in a facility where you have...
The book is The COPD Solution, The COPD Solution by Dawn Leslie Fielding. We'll be right back.